seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
All right, we are back. Welcome along to Golf Weekly. It is Nathan in the presenter's chair today. No Joe Malloy, but Fionn Davenport is with us. How are you?
Hey, Nathan. How are you? What's going on?
What was that? Was that some sort of a Northern Irish accent you were putting on?
No. Hey, Nathan.
Were you trying to impersonate Rory McIlroy? That's what it sounded like.
Oh, you know, I'm not going to argue with, you know, I mean, he is the best. He has won 4 majors in the last 2 years, so, you know.
How's life? Where in the world are you?
I'm in Florence.
Nice.
Italy. Florence, Italy. Yes, indeed. So I'm sitting in my mother's living room.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Sun shining?
Yeah. It was until, and then it's kind of rained today, but it's due to be, it's unseasonably warm here. It's like 28 degrees at the end of October.
So, as usual on Golf Weekly, we should start by apologising by not living up to our name. Everybody's been away for the last few weeks, so sorry about that. And in some ways, there's not a lot going on. It's that sort of weird time of the year where, because all the majors are so condensed, that everyone sort of forgets about everything that's happening. But there's a lot going on this week, so we sort of felt we better come along and do a podcast. We've got a brilliant competition coming up in a moment that I will tell you about, but I'll get to our mentions. I'm not going to read out the mentions that are basically going, "Where are you, lads?" Just listeners getting pissed. We're doing our best here. We're doing our best. Fit for Golf says, at Robbie Cannon was a recent guest on Golf Weekly. He's been Shane Lowry's S&C coach for the last 4 years. Spoke about many things you'll find interesting. Very well spoken. In extremes lie danger, which was one of his mottos. Yeah, at Robbie Cannon podcast, if you missed it, is well worth checking out. We also have a tweet in from Andrew Fitzgerald. Best part of the Japan skins is Brian O'Driscoll, one of Ireland's best rugby players, making a birdie putt, but Rich Lerner goes and calls him Mike Tindall. Oh, I don't know if anybody, well, nobody could have missed this so far. So Brian O'Driscoll, for any of our American listeners, is our greatest ever rugby player and actually a colleague of us on Off the Ball. And he somehow ended up getting invited to play in the Japan skins. Played one hole, it seems. Did you see much of this, Fionn?
Well, I just saw the one hole.
So the Japan skins was this, again, made for television experience that I think fell a little bit flat with Tiger, Rory, Matsuyama, and who was the fourth? Jason Day,
who won
the whole thing in the end. Yeah. But they, I don't know, did they bring a lot of different celebrities? But they certainly had one hole where they had 4 rugby players. So Brian Habana was one of them, and Brian O'Driscoll was one of them, and O'Driscoll was playing McIlroy, and O'Driscoll hole this monster putt. Like this is living the dream. Like, this guy is up there for our foreign listeners and Ireland's greatest sports people. But I still think holding a putt, what was it, 20 foot, 25 feet in front of Tiger Woods? Like, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And then as soon as he holed it, McIlroy gave him a really earnest hug. And it was all like, you know, it was like a proper kind of bro hug. And then there's this great moment where Tiger Woods kind of leans in, but not with his body, just with his arm. And a little kind of high five to O'Driscoll. But, like, you're getting the impression that, like, Tiger's not fully committed to the celebration. But, you know.
What you're suggesting is that for some reason, Tiger Woods can't get behind somebody else's excitement. That he just doesn't care.
Or something. But I'm sure in the post-match, he said, you know, it's great playing with those guys. You know, they're all so talented. You know, it's great. It's great. Everything is great.
Hey. This is a good day, though. Tiger is back. We're going to get into that at the Zozo Championship. Yeah. Tiger is tied for the lead after a pretty remarkable back 9 of 29. So we're going to chat about that. And we'll also talk about Dave Tyrrell. Breaking news, McIlroy declares for Ireland at the Olympics. It deserves a pod on its own. In fairness, this is about the fourth time in the past year he's declared for Ireland. So I'm not quite sure about that, but we will talk. In fact, I was thinking, Fionn, we should just name this McIlroy Weekly. Because
McIlroy Weekly, even
at a quiet time of the year, every single week, there seems to be about 5 different stories surrounding Rory. So we'll get to some of those in just a moment. But first, our competition. It is to celebrate the opening of the Farnham Estate Spa and Golf Resort in Cavan. They've got a new clubhouse and one lucky listener. Well, we are giving you the chance to win a two-night escape with breakfast each morning and dinner for two in the beautiful Cedar Rooms restaurant at Farnham Estate. There's also a round of golf for two included on the resort's wonderful Par 72 Parkland course. And after your game, Fionn, you can enjoy a delicious lunch in the new clubhouse, which features a brand new bar and restaurant area and a spacious terrace overlooking the lush Farnham Estate. I've heard from people who've been up there recently that it is very nice indeed. Check out farnhamestate.ie if you're interested in going. Were you there?
I was. Well, not since it's been done up. Oh, well, then, a few years ago.
I was there many years ago.
No, but it's an impressive place.
What do you call them? Infinity pools?
Yes.
Yeah, and it goes outside. When I was there, it was snowing. So you're outside and all the snow's around you. Oh, it was a thing of beauty.
I was there with an ex of mine and I played a round of golf and she just came out for the walk. And at one point...
Is that why she's your
halfway
ex?
Through, yeah, probably. That and other reasons. But so as we're walking around, I noticed that she's like walking around and she's fixing divot, one divot after another. She's going over and kind of repairing divots. And I says to her at one point, it's like, what are you doing? She goes, oh, no, there's a sign in the clubhouse that says, please repair all divots. And I was like, yeah, all the divots that we make. Not like, which I thought was pretty good and very sweet.
Wow, but, very sweet. But anyways, forgotten about now. So if you want to go to Farnham Estate in, I'm not going to tell you where because that's going to be our question. All you've got to do is tweet at Golf Weekly OTB and at Farnham Estate with the answer to which county is Farnham Estate in and your name. And we'll pick the winner who'll win the round of golf and all that other nice stuff as well. We'll announce the winner on next week's Golf Weekly. So that's tweet at Golf Weekly OTB and at Farnham Estate with what county Farnham Estate is in and you will have a chance to win. All right, let's talk about all that is going on in the world of golf. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Shane Ryan, who I think is there, friend of the pod. Afternoon, Shane.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I will be in your lovely country in 2 days, by the way.
What?
Yeah, I'm going on an Irish trip with my dad and my brother. We're doing Dublin, then we're going north and swinging around all the way to Galway over the course of a week.
And are you playing golf?
No, they don't play golf. And I actually had ACL surgery this year, so I'm just starting to hit again. So we're going to do just a lot of touristy, a lot of tours, a lot of history stuff, and probably a lot of drinking, too.
Am I correct in saying that Fionn Davenport was your unofficial tour guide and has given you all the advice and all the best places to finish to check out?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. He sent me a beautiful email with everything we could do, and we're using so much of it. And obviously, he's a travel writer. So, it pays off over and over again to know you guys. I really appreciate it.
Well, maybe we'll run into you. We should go for a pint. I'm going to be down in Galway all next week. I can show you all the best parts of Galway.
Yeah, we'll be in Galway on Wednesday, and I would love to do that if you could email me. We'll be there Wednesday. I'll be there Wednesday through Saturday early morning, if that works for you.
We shall do that on Wednesday. We shall have a pint on Wednesday evening then. And maybe you can get rid of your brothers and we can have a game of golf as well. It could work out very well for everybody. All right, we'll definitely do that. And you can give us your full review of Fionn's travel writing and also of Ireland over the next couple of weeks. We want to get you on because, well, we'll talk about Tiger, but firstly, I mentioned there, like Rory McIlroy, every week there is a story, and this week there's many stories. The best one over the last couple of weeks was obviously Brooks Koepka's comments saying, I've been out here for what, 5 years? Rory hasn't won a major since I've been on the PGA Tour, so I just don't view it as a rivalry. McIlroy, I thought he was going to bite back, but just said, well, he's not wrong. He's been the best player for the last couple of years with four majors. I don't think he had to remind me I hadn't won one in a while. But, you know, like, is this starting to feel like a bit of a rivalry?
You know, it is starting to feel like a rivalry. I loved what Brooks said because I just kind of like a little intrigue, a little drama. And I do feel like both Rory and Brooks have a really good sense of humor, along with being really tough competitors. So I felt there was a double thing there with what Brooks was doing, which was, yeah, he was throwing down the gauntlet for sure in a fun way, but also he was kind of, I mean, there's a little bit of like humor behind it and in a way that I think he thought Rory might get. And, you know, that's rare to see that with an American golfer. I mean, you know, 90% of these guys are so boring. So I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoy kind of the emergence of Brooks Koepka's personality in the last year after a time when we kind of thought maybe he didn't have one. I was actually really disappointed by Rory's response. I tweeted it was basically him pledging allegiance to Brooks Koepka. I was kind of like, come on, Rory, you're tougher than that. Like, yeah, he, you know. Sure, yeah, you haven't won a major, and that's a big deal, but you're also playing amazing golf. And so I was hoping maybe for a little more, you know, brimstone and fire from Rory in return. But I definitely think it tweaked him, even despite what he says. And I can't wait for the next time he beats Koepka, because I think we're going to get something a little more fun out of him, hopefully, then.
Yeah, Fionn, Rory has let us down badly here, because the only response is, when he's asked about this, you go, oh, sorry, I didn't hear that. I've been busy counting my $15 million.
I was just going to say, or he goes, hey, Brooks, why don't you come over to my house? I'll show you what $15 million looks like. You
know? That's right. That's right.
You're absolutely right. So I thought Brooks was funny, and it was cheeky and all the rest. But like when you watch the Rory interview, he's trying to take it on, but at the same time, he doesn't do smack that well. Like he just doesn't. It's either... I wonder if Rory's afraid that if he says something, he's going to go way over the top and say something. Mm. So he's going to err on the side of, eh, you know, he's like, that dickhead. Oh, wait, no, sorry. No, scratch that. But it was a bit of a lame response.
Obviously, Koepka's right here as well as the thing, Shane. You look at the stats, even over the last 2 years since Koepka won his first US Open, he's won 7 times, 4 of them majors. Rory's won 4 tournaments, including a players and a tour championship. So it's going to be difficult for Rory to go with the smack talk until he actually goes and steps ahead and wins a 5th major.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's a really sort of like long-term game plan from Rory, because maybe that was the best play in the end, because you really can't say anything in return. You could do the $15 million thing, and that would have been really funny. But the truth is that just the way golf is, people care more about majors. And so... in the end, maybe that comes off looking a little bit weak, or who knows. But you're right. I mean, there really is only one response to this, and that's that Rory has to win a major. It's the same thing we've been saying for so long. You guys know I covered his 2 majors really closely when he won in 2014, and how dominant and how tough and confident he looked. It would have been baffling to me if you had told me then that you're going to go into the year 2020 and he's going to have no more majors in that time in the next 5 years. That would have been pretty much unthinkable. So he knows it. You know, it's just part of the game. I mean, he's starting to play amazing golf. I felt he was a completely deserving winner of the Player of the Year award from the PGA Tour. You know, he played the best golf. He had the best stats. And he's really, I think, the best player in the world at this very specific moment. But he does. He needs to win majors. There's no doubt about it. And once he does that again, you know, I do think Rory... I just want to see him win a major, and I feel like he'll have something devastating to say. You know, I still believe in him. I haven't given up on the Rory of my imagination.
What was the last great golf rivalry, Shane? Obviously, like Tiger and Phil, but it was never a rivalry because Tiger was so dominant. Are you going back to Watson and Nicklaus? Has there been anything since then?
Yeah, no, sure. That's a great question, and it is. It's one of those
Greg Norman and Nick Faldo.
Yeah, maybe, but even that seemed like a more psychologically devastating than a good rivalry. You know, I mean, like with the way Faldo beat Norman at that first Masters. And then, yeah, I mean, Watson Nicklaus is probably, I think you do have to go back that far. It's just the nature of golf. It's really sort of deprived us of those special Tiger versus Phil or, you know, Rory versus Brooks. There's not been many of those moments. And, you know, thank God we have the Ryder Cup, actually. I mean, it's that kind of gives us, I think, the long-term, you know, rivalry. It's between teams instead of players, but you do get a lot of repeating head-to-head matchups and things that come back over the years. So I can kind of get my fix from that. But, yeah, I certainly can't count on head-to-head rivalries producing sort of magic moments. And who knows, maybe we'll get that with Rory and Brooks coming up, but it's you certainly wouldn't gamble on it based on recent history.
You're going to make the case for Norman Faldo, Fionn?
No, I have to say, I think Shane is dead right. I think it's Norman sitting with a 6-shot lead and Faldo just absolutely psychologically destroying him. Whilst at the same time, if I'm not mistaken, until Tiger Woods, Norman had the record for most weeks at number one. But it didn't matter. Like, Faldo just took him to the cleaners. And, like, Norman was one of those great performers in PGA events, but Faldo had his number all day long. So I agree with Shane. I think Faldo won that rivalry pretty easily. I was just looking at it here. But they also put in this list, they put in Tiger and Phil. And I think, Nathan, you're absolutely right. What rivalry? Mm. It's like there was Tiger number one, and then way, 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 way in the other county was Phil Mickelson bringing up the rear.
I always think that, like, for Greg Norman, obviously the collapse in 96 is devastating in many ways. But the fact it was Faldo makes it worse, because he rubs it in his face all the time, whether he means to or not. Like, every time he talks about it, it's the only time I've ever felt sorry for somebody on a golf course. Like, pity. Pity them. It's just, of all the people you didn't want to do it to, Nick Faldo is the one. Like, this does feel already, though, like a proper rivalry, Shane, because you think of, since the majors finished, the two biggest tournaments, the World Golf Championship and the Tour Championship, it's been Koepka against Rory. And one of them has played brilliant golf on the final day to overhaul the other. And, like, even their two different characters are slightly different, where you get the sense that, and maybe I'm wrong, and you'll probably know Koepka that bit more, of, like, Koepka's a little bit aloof. I know he doesn't get the credit, and there's that whole thing of the chip in his shoulder, but he uses that to his advantage. Where Rory, you just get the sense he genuinely just really wants to be liked.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think this does give us the best chance of a rivalry of any of the ones we've been talking about. I mean, you know, it's interesting when you talk about Tiger and Phil. There are two people that Phil won't smack talk, and Phil's a great smack talker. Both, you can kind of see it in media, but just in legends of the locker room. I mean, this guy is, like, devastating to people. But there's two people he won't smack talk. One is Matt Kuchar, because Kuchar's too witty for him, apparently. But the other is Tiger Woods, because Tiger Woods just has to say, Tiger Woods just has to point to his majors, and that's it. So, and, you know, it does remind me a little bit of the Rory Brooks dynamic right now. As good as Rory might want to be, there's sort of no argument until he wins one. But back to your point, yeah, you know, Brooks is, he's one of those things, isn't it, where he just has that rare hyper-competitive thing that, you know, maybe not quite like Michael Jordan, but that same thing where he's able to create chips on his shoulder from seemingly nothing. And, you know, anybody could pretend to do that, but Brooks has that thing where he seems to believe it once he creates this narrative in his head, and it seems to work. Or maybe he's just good at majors, who knows? But he really does seem to always look and find something to motivate him in an almost sociopathic way that a lot of great athletes of the past we've seen can do. And, you know, Rory, I think Rory does want to be liked. I really do like Rory. If he wants to be liked, he's succeeded on me. I think he's a really smart and interesting person, but he does seem a little more well-rounded, like more of a normal person. And, you know, maybe that's a weakness on the golf course. I mean, it's a strength as a human being, but maybe it puts him just a little bit behind in the competitive drive category for what we see from Koepka.
I think there's an interesting echo to a rivalry from 50 years ago, and it's the one between Nicklaus and Palmer, in that you had Palmer, who was the established great, very popular with the crowds, would, you know, talk to people going up the fairways, was very much the people person. And that's more McIlroy, in the sense McIlroy is well-liked, you know, he's popular with the fans. He gives great interview, as Shane says, he's very rounded, he's very intelligent. And then you had Nicklaus, who came on ice cold, absolute winner, wasn't particularly well liked by a lot of the fans, more admired, completely dominated golf courses in a way that Brooks is doing. So Brooks doesn't engage with the crowds in the same way. So, I mean, I wonder if there isn't echoes of that. And so that for Brooks v. Rory, we're looking at Jack v. Arnie. And for all of Arnie's greatness, we all know how that rivalry ended up.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, another thing, too, is, I mean, yeah, Nicklaus was respected and maybe even liked as his career went along, but he was actually, you know, pretty strongly disliked at the beginning of his career when he was kind of like this chubby little kid who all of a sudden was beating Arnold Palmer, who was everybody's, you know, favorite uncle. So he actually, he was disliked pretty prominently for a long time, or at least I would say a period of 2 to 3 years before it became clear just how great he was and before his own personality had emerged. So maybe there's another echo, and I think you make a great comparison, another echo to Brooks, where this guy when he first won, it was a little bit of dislike, but also, oh my God, what a what an absolute blank of a personality. He wouldn't even, you know, mark his ball when he was about to win that one PGA championship. He had a tap in, and he wouldn't even mark his ball so that he had the last putt and could celebrate in style, to the point that I think Faldo on the CBS broadcast in America was going, no, as he tapped the ball in. As in, like, come on, observe a little bit of tradition or have a sense of the moment, at least. And, of course, that's changed completely now that we know a little bit more about him. But, yeah, I think you make a terrific comparison. The echoes are the analogies are almost perfect between that.
Mm.
Interesting, Kepka this week, obviously not playing and going to miss his defence of the CJ Championship. He slipped on wet concrete and aggravated a long-standing left knee injury, which prompted the withdrawal. And in fact, the more interesting quotes are from Tiger Woods, who is the President's Cup captain, and he says, "We're just waiting to see what the surgeon says and what Brooks is going to do. He's getting other opinions and what are his options. You want to go through as many different opinions as you possibly can before you decide what you're going to do with this," which is, listen, there's a lot of time still to go before the Masters, but you would just worry, I guess, Shane, as to how serious this knee injury might be.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not worried about the Masters. I'm worried about the President's Cup. I mean, it's
aren't
the best
we all?
Tournament of the year. It's the best tournament of the year. We don't want to see Brooks. I'm actually going to be down there in Australia this year for that. No joke.
Wait now one second. Are you on the President's Cup junket? So suddenly this is the greatest event there's ever been.
I'm saying that very much tongue in cheek. I do. You know, whatever. I'm sure I'll enjoy the President's Cup. I will watch the President's Cup on a Sunday if it's close, which is almost never true. It's usually a complete blowout. I am going this year, just because it's cool to go to Australia. But I think the one thing that's interesting about it is just to see kind of what the Americans are thinking in terms of the Ryder Cup. So sometimes the captain's pick or sometimes the pairings, you can kind of get an inkling of what might be going on. For example, this year, if Jordan Spieth gets a captain's pick, and Patrick Reed surely will, it'll be interesting to see if they're paired together at all. I kind of doubt it. But little things like that, I think, are good. You know, the U.S. always wins, and they try to say, oh, this bodes well for the Ryder Cup, and then it ends up not mattering at all. We just get our butts kicked completely. But, yeah, so anyway, yeah, the bigger question is, you know, it's the same thing with Rory. We've seen it with Dustin Johnson with these crazy accidents where it seems that these guys seem really injury-prone. Mm. They're bigger and they're stronger, and they work out a lot more than anybody did, you know, generations ago. And, of course, Tiger is the ultimate example of a guy who spent a lot of time injured. Yeah, I would hope that, you know, a recurring knee injury is not in his future. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, is it ligament damage, which would be a nightmare? Is it a torn meniscus, which is not as much of a nightmare, but still pretty bad? You would hate to see that narrative kind of overtake Brooks' career, but it just seems so prominent, not only in golf either, just in a lot of sports right now with these young athletes.
Rory did a lot of talking this week, from committing again to playing for Ireland at the Olympics. One of the other things he was asked about was this ban for Matt Every, a 3-month ban for violating the PGA Tour's drug policy, which, as we know, even the very fact this has come out is quite a shocking revelation in itself. McIlroy says he's paranoid about the possibility of failing a drugs test in the wake of Matt Every receiving a 3-month ban. Every says that the ban was for cannabis, which he claims to have a prescription on medical grounds. And while cannabis is prohibited, WADA dropped the cannabis compound CBD from its list of banned substances. I don't know from your time on tour, Shane, how much you know about Matt Every and if you spent any time with him, because my main memory of Matt Every was from 6-7 years ago, up at about 3 o'clock in the morning watching the Sony Open in Hawaii, and he sat down with Kelly Tillman for one of the great post-round interviews where Kelly sat him down to talk about his lifestyle choices. Where did he receive a ban? He had certainly been in trouble for drugs previously, and Kelly sat him down to just have the chat and, listen, I'm sure since those issues, you've spent some time contemplating your life choices. And Matt Every looked at him and went, no, I don't think I did anything wrong. I'm just out enjoying myself here. There's a lot more people on this tour doing far worse than I am. And Kelly didn't really know where to look. This is obviously, for Matt Every, not a good look.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's a bad look for the PGA Tour more than anyone. So I want to, really quick on that Kelly Tillman interview, I'm trying to find exactly what she said, but there was, I think it was something like there was an island behind them in the water, and she turned around and said, you know, back here behind us, we have a lonely island or something like that. And she was like, you've been pretty lonely yourself. And whatever it was one of the worst segues I've ever seen in TV history. And Matt Every's response was perfect. No, I actually spent a lot of time with Matt Every. There's an excerpt that people want. They can go online. There's a chapter on him from my book. He's a really interesting, funny, and by far the most open interview that I had with anybody the year I was writing Slaying the Tiger. So, yeah, I like Matt Every a lot. He's been through some things. I think he went through a divorce. His life's been a little rocky. But the truth is, a lot of people, you know, look, marijuana is legal in many states now. A lot of people use it for medical reasons. A lot of people use it for anxiety. I don't know exactly what he's using it for, but there's going to come a point when it's legal in all 50 states here. And, you know, I live in North Carolina. We'll probably be the last state because the conservative southeastern states will sort of be the last to drop. But it's something that's more and more accepted. It's something that's normal. And generally people are agreeing that it shouldn't be criminalized, right? And so the fact that he's being banned for this, it's like, come on, what is the point? Who cares? It's not really going to help him play golf any better unless, you know, it helps him with his anxiety, but you certainly wouldn't ban, you know, Klonopin or any kind of like benzo that helps you with anxiety. Yeah. It's not a performance enhancing drug. It's becoming part of the culture. It's going to be legal soon. What is the point of banning him for 3 months for failing this drug test? What is the point of having cannabis or marijuana on the drug test in the first place? I really don't get it. And it just seems backwards to me, really.
Fionn, we've spoken about this before. Do you agree? Because obviously the counter to that is that, as Shane said, cannabis, if it makes you less anxious in a sport like golf where it's such a mental game and where nerves are such a factor, that actually it is performance enhancing.
Okay, so, there are lots of things that can help you with your mood. So let's say, for example, any golfer can go to a doctor and say, I'm depressed, and they will prescribe you with beta blockers, which antidepressants are beta blockers. So you can take an antidepressant that will suppress your anxiety. And if you have a prescription for it, you are perfectly legally entitled to take one.
Exactly.
I think the issue with the cannabis is that U.S. law has changed so much in the last 10 years. So as Shane points out, it's legalized in a bunch of states, including Colorado, Oregon, Washington, California. It's decriminalized in places like New York and elsewhere. So as Shane points out, like, it's not going to be that long before you can smoke weed in any state in the union. So something that is legal for you to do, and I don't know, I mean, Nathan, let's not kid ourselves. I've smoked a lot of weed in my life. Believe me, it doesn't help me concentrate on anything. And there is no way getting stoned before you play golf is going to help you play better golf. No way.
Well, I would say it's almost certain that Matt Every's not doing it before golf. You know, this stuff obviously stays in your system a long time, so you could do it, you know, 2 weeks earlier and it would give you a positive test. But yeah, like you said, I don't think it would be wise or smart to do it like before your round. I think he's using it for generalized anxiety, not golf-related sports anxiety.
Golf-related anxiety. Because then you could say, like, let's say, for example, I mean, you know, in terms of Nathan, your point is like anything that kind of calms the nerves. You could have two glasses of wine and it'll calm you down.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
Don't know a lot of professional golfers who are going to take a couple of swift whiskeys before hitting that first tee because it's going to calm their nerves, even though they are perfectly legally entitled to do so. That would be, so I would think of it in those terms.
We are tight in time. I do want to touch on Tiger because he's back. All our worries.
Yeah.
They were totally misjudged. I still find it strange seeing 15-time major champion written down. So he's playing at this Zozo Championship in Japan. He started by playing the first three holes in 3 over par and hit some absolutely shocking shots, found water with his opening tee shot, and you were sort of going, uh-oh, it's still there, whatever's been going wrong physically. But he turned it round, 9 birdies in his last 15 holes. He's on 6 under par. He's tied for the lead. He revealed that he underwent an arthroscopic procedure on his left knee in August to repair some minor cartilage damage, which he really felt had been hampering him since the start of the season. Somehow managed to get through the Masters, had been putting it off, and obviously had the surgery. And it looks as though, Shane, he's back to where he was sort of last March, April.
Yeah, wild. Absolutely. Well, like you said, you know, you saw the +3, and that kind of fits in with what you were expecting. you know, someone just coming back. You know, it's, there's really no guarantee that he's going to stay healthy for very long. So yeah, you see plus three and you go, okay, I get it. You know, this is what I expected. This is what we're going to be dealing with. And then you're kind of watching Twitter and tuning in a little bit over the next 15 holes. You're like, oh my God, here he comes again. This is the guy you can't keep down. I famously wrote a column in 2015 saying Tiger Woods is done. So I certainly am off that beat. I'm not. I've taken enough crap from people on Twitter and everything that I never, ever again. Even if he's 70 years old and in a wheelchair, I'll never say Tiger Woods is done. But I definitely didn't expect this. And probably, if you're asking me, will he keep it going? I mean, it does seem far fetched a little bit to think of him staying healthy. Like you said, he had another knee surgery pretty recently. But here he is again, minus six. I mean, the numbers don't lie, and I guess this is greatness. You know, it's like almost like the aftershocks of an earthquake. You know, we're past maybe the magnitude 9.8 on the Tiger Richter scale of his career. But when you have something that big and that profound, the aftershocks are still pretty amazing. And so here he is again, six under. It just proves how great he is. And I don't know, just what he's capable of, even when he looks down and out completely.
Yeah, he just reeled us back in again, Fionn.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and then when you look at the scores, because, like, you know, some very good players are over par, you know? So it's like McIlroy's two over, Tony Finau's two over, Jason Day's three over. Yeah, Rafa Cabrera-Bello. Yeah, it's like, Graham McDowell's 11 over. Mm. Like, so the general score is over par, and, you know, he shares the lead with Gary Woodland. But, yeah, six under. But then again, you know, we'll see. He putted really, really well today, though. Like, really well. He only hit six fairways in regulation.
You're not willing to commit.
Yeah, I want to, of course. Five knee surgeries.
I'm with you. I'm very non-committal right now, but I'm also don't want to get on the wrong side of the Tiger maniacs. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Although Shane, one of the things that I think I jumped to your defense on Twitter after he won the Masters is like you, because I know you got tons of abuse about, like, I always knew Tiger was going to come back. And I'm like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. The man could barely walk.
Tiger didn't know he was. Tiger himself said he didn't know if he was going to come back. So all these guys, yeah. So absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, yeah. He's 44?
My take that only infuriates them more is to say I was largely correct. The take was mostly right, and it's going to be right eventually. There's going to be a time where he is done, so I stand by everything I wrote.
If it wasn't just for that one week in April. All right, Shane, thanks a lot for taking the call. We'll talk to you soon, maybe in Galway next Wednesday.
Sounds great. I would love that. Have a great one, guys.
Your people talk to my
take
people.
Take care, Shane.
Fionn, just before we wrap up, Paul Dunne is somebody hopefully we can get on the pod over the next little while. He's obviously having an absolute nightmare over the last few months. He's playing this week. He's desperately trying to save his card. It is the final event of the race to Dubai. So himself, Gavin Moynihan, Michael Hoey, one last opportunity at the Portugal Masters. And before he came into studio, I'd had a look and he was going along very nicely on three under par. At that stage, he probably would have been just about in, but he dropped three shots in his final three holes to drop back to level par. He probably needs a top 30, 35 finish, depending on what other people do. It's been remarkable, his struggles over the last little while. Like, looking at some of the statistics and where it's gone wrong. Since finishing fourth at the Made in Denmark Open back in May, he's missed 11 of his last 13 cuts. Best finish tie for 23rd at the Czech Masters.
Yeah, it's and I think that it, like, his struggles today encapsulate the almost unbearable pressure of playing to keep your card. I mean, something our own Peter Lawrie knows all too well, unfortunately. And that idea of you're going along nicely and then all of a sudden it just takes something, just tightens up a tiny little bit, and before you know it, you're leaking shots. And I mean, it's not a joke. Like, you're watching your job just disappear in front of you. And it's horrific.
It is little things, because you're looking through his statistics and, you know, anecdotally people are saying, oh, he's, you know, really struggling with the driver. But, like, you look at his statistics and there's not been a huge decline in his statistics compared to 2018 and 2017. You know, his driving accuracy, like, it's never been great. And in fact,
how many putts is he making?
This is the problem. So his putting has obviously been such the key part of his game. In fact, his average putts for round in 2017 was the best on the European Tour. This year, he's 39th. Now, even still, you're going from 1.72 per round to 1.76 per round.
But yeah, no, it's not a big difference.
It's not a huge difference, but obviously, again, the margins are so fine, particularly when you're missing cuts, that it's all just coming together and it's turned into an absolute nightmare. And as you say, you end up in this situation that so many professional golfers have.
Yeah.
It's the final week. He's going to be in a situation that even if he doesn't finish in the top 117, he'll still be guaranteed something like 20-22 starts next year. But
so he has a chance of recouping his card again with 22
but
starts.
But the problem is he's in that situation where, and Peter Lawrie has spoken about this, he's sitting back home in Wicklow on a Monday. The call comes through, you're in. And you got to fly to South Africa and somehow be able to perform 48 hours later.
That's absolutely right. And it's horrendous. Just before we go, Nathan, I just wanted to tell you about my little sejour in Marrakesh last week.
Wait a second. Now you're in Florence. Last week you're in Marrakesh.
I was. I went to so IAGTA, which is the International Association of Golf Tour Operators, had their annual conference in Marrakesh this year. And so I went along and so it's great, actually, in fairness. Hung out with a lot of the folks from the Golf Ireland stand. So there was like 16 odd golf courses from all over the island, from Carton House to Ballybunion to Gangorm and a whole bunch of other places.
Look at you schmoozing.
I know, yeah. But this is the nice one. So on the awards night on the Thursday, they announced the award for best golf resort in Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. And the winner was Adair Manor. So Colm Hannon and his wife Sue were there to receive the award. So I had a very, very nice dinner with the pair of them. It was lovely, I have to say.
And did they mention that maybe the key to that success was Golf Weekly going down and giving them
actually,
that,
do you know what, in fairness, Colm,
unbelievable review.
He knew. He obviously had heard about the day and he was delighted that we loved it. And I actually did confide in him and I said, listen, Joe even had to edit the pod slightly to take out some of the the over-the-top childish enthusiasms. It was just a bit. And I said, listen, it was like the three of us. We were like pigs in clover. Like it was, we were so happy. So he was obviously thrilled. But they're all, everything is all about the Pro-Am. So, and I must
go
confess, I didn't see that there's an invite to this Pro-Am.
No,
he
didn't happen to mention. Oh yeah, was that a meeting and your names came up about playing with Jordan
Spieth? Three beyond with exactly. No,
no,
but everything is all about the Pro-Am, because when you consider, I mean, bar the Open Championship at Portrush, will there be a bigger golf event on the island of Ireland?
No, and do you know what, Fionn? I think we can both agree it will be the greatest golf event ever to take place on the island of Ireland, on the greatest.
Yes.
Stage
golf course
in the island of
absolutely
Ireland.
Different.
I think we can both
indeed
agree on this, and we can say it time and time and time again.
Wholeheartedly,
and we will
agree.
And we will say it time and time again. Yet
and we
still
will repeat
we'll
it
be outside the ropes when it comes to it. Of course, my favourite golf course right now, Fionn, as you know, is the Farnham Estate and Spa
indeed
Golf Resort. And one last chance, just
all
in case you missed it earlier
prepared
on. All the divots are taken care of. Bring your ex girlfriend. Maybe is that why she's your ex? She's like, this guy plays golf, and I literally have to go around filling in divots.
Fixing divots.
So to celebrate the opening of the impressive new clubhouse at Farnham Estate Spa and Golf Resort, we're giving one lucky listener the chance to win a two-night escape with breakfast each morning and dinner for two in the beautiful Cedar Rooms restaurant at Farnham Estate. It is quite a prize. There's also a round of golf for two included on the resort's wonderful par 72 parking course for two. So don't bring your ex-girlfriend. Bring someone who's going to play and not just fill in the divots.
Yeah.
And after your game of golf, you'll enjoy a delicious lunch in the new clubhouse, which features a new bar and restaurant area and a spacious terrace overlooking the lush Farnham Estate. It is pretty much everything included when you get yourself up there. All you got to do is tell us in what county is Farnham Estate Spa and Golf Resort. Tweet at Golf Weekly OTB and at Farnham Estate with your name and we will pick a winner next week. We got a pod together. Short notice, but we managed to get a pod together.
Well done, Nathan.
Fionn. Enjoy Florence.
Thanks, Nathan.
When are you going to be back in
thank
studio with us?
A couple of weeks' time, I think.
I should try and drag Shane Ryan into studio next week.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Into
I know he's on his holidays, but come on.
I'm sure.
We'll
can
see what we can do. Yeah. We'll see what we can do. All right. Good stuff, Fionn.
All right. Thanks,
we'll talk
Shane
to you again.
Thanks,
no,
Nathan.
I'm Nathan. He was
see
Shane earlier.
Yeah.
Oh, my
sorry.
God.
Typical.
All right. All right. We'll talk to you. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
A sad end. All right. Enter that competition. We'll announce the winner next week when we will be back. Talk to you then. Good luck.